was reading this gospel passage this week, I was reminded of a memory from when I was 19 years old. I had just finished my freshman year of college and was back home for the summer to save money and live at home. And I had to get a summer job, so I got a summer job at the local Menards home improvement store on the other side of town. And I got hired into the paint department, which was an awesome job. I really loved it. As it turns out, it's actually kind of fun to mix paint. They have some pretty sophisticated machinery that figures out exactly how to match colors. It was pretty awesome. But it was an interesting job as well. One of the other reasons I liked it is because you got to meet a bunch of random people, mostly who you would only see one time, and then you would never see them again, and so you kind of meet all types. And I always found it a little bit funny because people would walk into the store, come back to the paint section, and they'd come and find you, and they'd ask you questions, assuming that you knew the answers to the questions. And half the time, I was thinking to myself, I don't know why you're asking me this, man. You're like twice my age. You should know more than I do. So you do your best to read the labels really well on all of the products so that you feel like you have a clue as to what to tell people. But I have I'll say this. Most of the people that I met that summer, I don't remember. But there is one in particular that I do remember. It was a meeting that I came across with this sort of older gentleman, probably about the age of my grandpa. And it was one occasion where instead of me walking around trying to find people and asking if they want help, I think I was organizing shelves or something, and he came up to me and talked to me. And as I began to speak to this man, to be honest, I'm not sure even where the conversation started, if he asked me a question about where to find something in the store, but very soon the conversation veered and he just wanted to have a kind of a conversation with someone. And I was like, okay, I'm a nice young man. I'll have a conversation with you. That's fine. And so he asked me if I was religious. And I said, yeah, I'm Catholic. And he kind of got this little like shift in his face. And he said, well, let me ask you a question. Do you know who Carol Wojtyła is? And I'm thinking to myself, what did you just, and so I'm going through my Rolodex in my brain, like, okay, like, what do I remember from my theology classes? Who is this guy? And then I remembered, and I was like, oh yeah, I know who Carol Wojtyła is. That's Pope John Paul II. And then I was like, tried to get me, but you didn't, because I know my theology. And so I felt proud of myself, but it was interesting because the conversation began to turn, and as this man continued to talk, it was very clear that he was just wanting to find someone to just say whatever it was. He just really wanted to start talking. So I ended up doing not a lot of talking and just a lot of listening. But it was a little bit difficult and sad because as we continued to have our conversation, the man's face changed. And it began to become like distorted and just like pain-filled and angry. And I began to notice he actually had an incredible, like an unusual number of wrinkles on his face. Like his entire face was just full of lines and lines and lines and lines across his skin. And he began to kind of just speak his mind in a bizarre way to like a stranger. And I'm thinking to myself, dude, I don't even know you. I don't know why are you having this kind of conversation with me? And he said, I'm going to give you some life lessons, kid. Let me tell you, this is what you need to know more than any. This is the best piece of advice I can ever give you. Never trust anybody. Never trust anybody. And he continued to talk to me about why this was apparently life's most important lesson. And I was just like really taken aback. Number one, at the kind of things that was coming out of this guy's mouth, because he was like the edge of my grandpa, but he started to just speak in vulgarities even. And I'm like, what, dude, just, you can be polite. You don't have to say swear words. But I just kind of stood there listening to him, and I don't even recall anymore how I got out of the conversation. I might have just started backing up a little bit. But eventually we parted ways, and it gave me something to ponder. I remember very specifically feeling sad for that man. and just really wondering about his life. Because it was clear to me from that conversation that he just really felt like he needed to have with some random young teenage boy, where he just needed to get out the poison that was inside of him, that the only thing that he could manage to communicate was his own bitterness about life and his own anger that evidently was in him and raging that was within him. And the lesson that I took away from that conversation that was a vow that I made to myself that very moment, and I said to myself, I am never going to be like that. It was just so sad to kind of watch someone whose life was so full of bitterness and so full of pent-up anger inside that the only thing they could do was be so angry that it literally became marks on their face across their skin. Is there a great lesson about how it is, number one, that we come to difficulties in life, and number two, how it's possible to carry those difficulties with us. And the story of Jesus and the 10 lepers, I think, was probably one of those stories that occurred to me at 19 years old that I didn't know that I was even clued in on with this conversation with an old man at the Menards, and about how human suffering is such a sticky question, and how it leads people in so many different directions in life. Jesus, who here is meeting 10 lepers, is literally meeting people who probably couldn't endure more suffering than they did. Not simply just physical suffering, but you may recall that in Jesus' time, to have leprosy was more than a physical death sentence. It was like an emotional death sentence and a psychological death sentence, because you were, according to religious law, it was necessary for you to go away. You had to go away. You were completely isolated, even from your own family, who had to disown you because of your leprosy. And so you were set apart to be isolated. And so what did you do? You basically eventually died in isolation and suffered that whole journey. And the only companions that you had were the people that were dying with you in isolation. So there's a lot of desperation in the hearts of these lepers that are coming before Jesus, right? We have to put ourselves a little bit in their shoes and have to, just wondering, what is it that they must have been thinking? What is it that they must have went through? How is it they would have found themselves here in this place in Samaria, which was already a hated place by the Jewish people? Because the Samaritans were the people that were left behind when all the Jewish people went into exile several centuries before that. And all the Jewish people several centuries before that, when they were exiled to Babylon, the small remnant that stayed behind, eventually their generations became the Samaritans. Because not only did they miss out on all the pain and suffering of the captivity, but they also married with the local tribes and kind of became pagans again themselves. So they were like double traitors to the Jewish people. They weren't exactly well liked. And so Jesus comes and he views the kind of human suffering that's before him, and he has an opportunity to do anything that he chooses. So we have to think to ourselves, what is in the mind, what's in the eyes of Jesus when he looks upon these lepers, and what is in his heart to do for them? And it's actually a great example of how the prayer that he teaches us is like manifested in the world. The prayer that Jesus taught was the Our Father, right? Why is the Our Father so awesome? Well, number one, because God taught it. It's a perfect prayer. But what are the things that we pray? What's one of the first things that we pray in the Our Father? Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. This is the mindset that Jesus carries with him in his whole public ministry, to do the will of the Father on earth as it is being done in heaven. And so I want you to imagine this. Jesus seeing what his Father is doing in heaven, noticing what the kingdom of heaven is like, that is fully open before his eyes and the eyes of his heart. And what does he see when he looks into heaven? Does he see leprosy? Is there leprosy in heaven? Is there any isolation in heaven? Or any sadness in heaven? Any lacking in heaven? Is there any desperation in heaven? There is none of that. Right? Heaven is the place where all the things are made well. And that is what Jesus brings to earth. And so when he looks upon these lepers, what he wants to do for them is the very thing that he sees is true in heaven, in his Father's dwelling place. And so he makes whole what is not whole. He cures them. And he does it according to the way that they would also understand, because they know very well that the law of the land is for you to no longer be isolated, for you to come back into the community. If you were a leper, you had to be declared clean by the priest. It was the priest who had to look upon the place of your sores. He had to verify with his own eyes that they were now smooth and clean and gone. And he would say, this man is now clean. And then he would have been welcomed back into the community. So Jesus tells them to do what the law would tell them to do. Go show yourselves to the priests. But as we well know, when we look in the heart of Jesus, when we look in the mind of Jesus, we know that he's always doing something more. He's always desiring something deeper. And the story and the response of the one leper is the response that Jesus is really trying to show forth and to open up to us what it is that he's actually about. One of them, noticing that he was cleaned, returned glorifying God in a loud voice, fell at the feet of Jesus and thanked him. This one was a Samaritan. We're not sure if the others were or not. We know that this one was. And Jesus says, where are the others? Has no one but this one, the foreigner, returned to give thanks? And then he really reveals in his last line what the Father is doing to bring heaven to earth. Jesus said to the one who gave thanks, stand up and go. Your faith has saved you. You see, one of the very essential responses of faith in the human heart is gratitude. And gratitude, even on a natural level, has been called the healthiest of human emotions. And why is gratitude the healthiest of human emotions? Because gratitude, in a way above, I think, all others, has the power to bring wholeness where something is not whole. It has the power to restore the human heart, to restore the human soul. It's the natural reaction that we have when we receive even a great miraculous healing. At least we would hope. Now, interestingly, of the 10, one came back to give thanks. Which is also, I think, probably a life lesson that we've all experienced. How many times have you ever done something great for someone? Have you really wanted to give someone a gift and they weren't thankful for it? Yeah, how did that make you feel? Makes you feel not so good when someone is lacking gratitude. And in fact, Jesus says this. He says this through the words of St. Paul as a sort of kind of connective tissue here in the readings of this Sunday. Paul says that if we deny Jesus, he has to deny us in order to remain true to who he is. And one of the things that is a denial of Jesus is a lack of gratitude. It's a lack of gratitude. And it can happen. It does happen. It happens especially when we have, as human beings, to go through sufferings, even sufferings that we're not always responsible for. Was it the fault of these people that they became lepers? I don't know. It's reasonable, probably not. Or even, right, as a 19-year-old young man, this older gentleman that I met, just wondering in my heart, like, what did this guy go through? What kind of pain did this guy go through to hold on to such rage and to hold on to such bitterness and to live out of that bitterness? I don't know. It's reasonable to assume that probably some of the pain he went through was unjust, things that were not his fault, consequences that he was just dealt at the hands of someone else or some situation beyond his control. And so in the human heart, especially in regards to the difficulties and the sufferings, it's very much an option for us, even a temptation for us, to be so focused in on that suffering that we literally see nothing else in our lives around us. And if we choose that over and over and over, pain becomes bitterness. And it becomes bitterness because not only do we carry the burden of the pain, we carry the burden of the fact that we resent that pain. As if it's like a double strike to the heart, right? And so it becomes something that crushes us. Jesus knows that when he heals the human body, what he wants is for that human body healing to be a sign of the deeper thing that's going on, which is the healing of the human heart. And he'll know that that human heart is healed if what comes forth from the healing is what is supposed to come forth from the healing. First and foremost, our gratitude and our thanksgiving. And this is nothing new to any of us. I'm not saying anything that we don't already know, right? But doesn't this reveal to us this story about maybe how rare Thanksgiving truly is? 1 out of 10. Oof. That's not great. That's not great odds. How precious is the gift of Thanksgiving? Every Sunday when we come to Mass, we actually hear this. We proclaim this. You hear me proclaim this every Sunday. It is truly right and just. Our duty and our salvation, always and everywhere to give thanks. Lord, Holy Father, Almighty and Eternal God. Thanksgiving is salvific. Lack of thanksgiving is condemnatory. What a bad, if you just think about that, just for a second, we'll just, you know, two dudes hanging out in hell, suffering for all eternity. How did you get here? I forgot to say thank you. What a lame reason, right? To separate yourself from eternal joy. I don't say that as a way to minimize anyone's pain. All right, we all got stuff. And if we want our stuff to be lighter, even if there are sufferings that we can't exactly separate ourselves from, one of the best ways we do that is to ask the Lord to really help us to be grateful. This is something that I have found extraordinarily true, especially in my priestly life. My darkest days that I've had as a priest, my most bitter days I've had as a priest, my most heavy days have not been the days because bad things have happened. It's because I was lacking thanksgiving that day. I didn't have anything to be grateful for that day. And so it was just, I was totally empty, you know, feeling totally pitiful for myself and really discouraged. And it's amazing when I think about my best days as a priest, even if those days were filled with difficulties, I found them to be full of life because I noticed myself able to be grateful. What can we be grateful for even in suffering? And be grateful that God gives us the virtue of perseverance. That's one thing to be grateful for. Because perseverance is what lets us keep the graces that get us to heaven. Grateful for that God's promises, he never goes back on them. That if he tells us we'll be healed, that if he tells us what sufferings we go through are nothing in comparison to the glory that he reveals, that he gives us, that we'd be grateful for the grace of hope, that we'd be grateful for the grace of faith, that we be grateful for those who show us kindness in the midst of our suffering. So maybe something for us simply to hold on to this week and just to kind of ponder on. And just to ponder, Lord, when I pray, how often am I thankful? How normal is it for me to be thankful when I pray? When I begin to pray, is that the first words out of my mouth or those the last words out of my mouth? Or are they ever the words out of my mouth? And if so, how often? Because thanksgiving is a grace of healing in our souls. Helps us to get to heaven. Let's get to heaven.